Well, good morning.
Good morning.
I want to thank you all for this chance to worship with you on this beautiful, crisp fall morning and share with you some thoughts I have on the LGBTQ community. Now, aside from the introduction Tom gave, I want to give you a little personal context. So I'm a 50-year-old cisgender, and for those of you who haven't heard that term before, it means that I still identify with the gender I was assigned with at birth, gay white man, of Portuguese, Caribbean, and Irish descent who grew up in a working-class family in Fall River, Massachusetts. And I've been in Boston about 26 years. In terms of spirituality, I grew up Roman Catholic. I was a good little altar boy and sang in the folk group. And I was a member of the Episcopal Church for about 15 years. These days, I consider myself very much a seeker who's always interested in the ways in which people think and feel about themselves spiritually. So I guess, to put it not so simply, I am a post-Christian, free-range Buddhist who likes a good, spirited discussion. So maybe that makes me a Unitarian Universalist, no? So I can often be found at Cambridge Insight Meditation Center in Cambridge or at the Arlington Street Zen Center at the Arlington Street Church in downtown Boston. I also have an MDiv in Contemporary Society and Feminist Liberation Theologies from Episcopal Divinity School, where I worked for over 12 years. Now, when Tom and I began talking about this service, I had very little idea of what I would say and what worship here would be like. I want you all to know that while this sermon is my work, with the gracious help of my laptop and the muses, this service as a whole is the work of Tom, and I want to publicly thank him for that. Because you see, in the Episcopal Church where I worked for so many years, the services are pretty much just laid out. You're the guest preacher, you show up, and they say, there's the pulpit. Well, I soon realized that the UU community does things a little bit different. And I have to say, I am ridiculously grateful to my friend Tom for midwifing me through this wonderfully creative process of how services are born here at Theater Parker. At times, I think it was more like an emergency C-section, but thankfully, Tom held my hand the whole time. So, when I was thinking about LGBTQ issues, I was a bit overwhelmed with how many different directions I could take this in. But after some deliberation, I decided I wanted to invite you to reflect with me on the discussion that I'm finding most challenging these days, how to communicate and how to foster relationships across so many different sexual and gender lines in this postmodern world we live in. With the divisions in our country and our world right now, this kind of communication is critically important. But this is a huge undertaking, and one I hope that will be an ongoing dialogue in this sacred space. This discussion is dynamic, it's destabilizing, it's exciting, it's comforting, it's dangerous, and it can be enlightening, just to use a few adjectives. And from the beginning, I want to make it clear that this is difficult for everybody, whether you are a gender or sexual minority or not. The exploration of sexuality and gender identities is an ever-evolving task that seldom stays contained very long. And I can say with confidence that this discussion being had 20 years ago is very different than the one we're going to have today, and we can only imagine how different it will be in 20 years. Now, I've lived my life for almost 30 years as an openly gay man, coming out in the 80s and early 90s. I saw the beginning of the AIDS and HIV pandemic, and the uphill battle for effective treatments and still looking for a cure. I watched year after year, as I'm sure many of you did, as President Ronald Reagan refused to even mention the word AIDS until 1987, when over 20,000 people had died. Imagine now if any virus or plague had happened, if the president would take that long to mention anything. And that gives you a little bit of a message, as I think Tom's reading did, about the place we have been at. I watched the state-by-state battles for equal marriage, the recognition of marriage rights in the U.S. and many other countries around the world. I lived through, as many of you did, the coverage of the horrifying and brutal anti-gay beating of Matthew Shepard that caused his death. And lately, I've watched the sensationalized public gender transition of former All-American hero and Republican Caitlyn Jenner. I came of age when the American landscape largely divided people into two boxes, gay or straight. In the early days of my coming out, transsexuals, which was pretty much the only word we had for gender variant people, were seldom a central part of the dialogue in the struggle. When we did acknowledge trans people, they had better be moving toward a male or female identity, and there was no sense that they could be anything else. Bisexuals were either invisible or thought of as at best having a temporary identity, or at worst considered deceptive and guilty of undermining and hiding from the real struggle. I've seen the word queer change many times, from a despised term of hate to an academic and philosophical term, to one that was used as an important weapon in the fight for rights for sexual minorities, and now to an umbrella term that expresses an identity where old words and concepts just don't cut it. Since I began working at Fenway Health 2 years ago, I've gotten quite an education on many topics around sexuality and gender, from the many possible pronouns that people might prefer to numerous sexual identities that exist between, around, and outside of those once simple concepts of gay or straight. In terms of sexuality, now we talk about agender, gray sexual, pansexual, heteroflexible, to name a few. In terms of gender, we talk about agender, bigender, genderqueer, and genderfluid, to name a few. We no longer default to couples as the only valid form of relationship, but have come to understand that there are happily partnered, polyamorous people having various numbers of partners and genders of partners. I won't take the time to define all of these terms for you, but I do recommend doing a little research and asking a lot of questions, because new words can open up new worlds. In the world we live in now, the depth, the number, and the ever-changing nature of gender and sexuality can be dizzying. Trying to understand it all can leave us feeling inadequate and powerless. And it can lead us to misunderstand one another and make mistakes that cause hurt and pain. But I think even more important than that, an even bigger problem, is when we shut down because we're too confused and too afraid to make a mistake, and then we don't engage in any kind of discussion. When that happens, we lose the chance to learn and grow. We lose the chance to be in a human relationship. And as a therapist, I would argue that any time we have a significant relationship in our lives, it will involve hurting one another some of the time. How we handle the fact that we hurt people and we are hurt by them is an important measure of how healthy our relationships are. Now I know that questioning is part and parcel of being a Unitarian Universalist, and it always has been. Yet I think, if we're all honest with ourselves, this growing, expanding landscape is destabilizing and can leave us feeling stuck. Will I misgender someone? Will I show shock on my face when the friend I've known for years as a gay man tells me he's marrying a woman and now he identifies as pansexual? Will I secretly, or maybe not so secretly, question whether his choices are genuine? How can we navigate all of this? The first step is how Tom introduced me today, and hopefully how I introduce myself today. When you encounter someone you don't quite understand, start by telling that person about you as you begin the dialogue. Be vulnerable, be open, invite them into a relationship, and let them know that you are opening up to them before you ask them to open up to you. Tell the person that you don't know many things, that you have questions, and that you know you'll make mistakes when you get to know them. Ask, sincerely ask, for patience, and be willing to take responsibility for the mistakes and pain you might cause, even if it's unintended. The second thing I want to offer you is a more general framework, and that is the title of this sermon, Harbor Me. When Tom first talked to me about speaking to all of you today, that was the one thing I knew, that I wanted that song by Sweet Honey and the Rock to be played, and then I would build around that. The song is a series of questions, a call to social action, a call to relationship, and a call to personal transformation. And these are things that are key if we are to learn how to talk across differences. The song names a partial list of ways to be human. Some are religious, some are ethnic, some are based on actions, some on roles. In the song, we are not just asked to reflect on these identities, but we're asked to harbor them. Would we help? Would we bring them in close, to our safe zones and perhaps put ourselves at risk. This notion of harboring, bringing in, offering aid and compassion to the traveler or the stranger is a very old one. Now, let's take a look at a pretty controversial story on this topic, Sodom and Gomorrah. This story is told in Genesis, in Jewish and Christian scriptures, and is also mentioned in the Quran. And it is one of those stories that Christian, Jewish, and Muslim traditions have used repeatedly to condemn same-gender love. The basic story is that strangers, and perhaps their angels, come to these cities, and instead of being treated well, they are abused by the people of the city, specifically the men of the city. This story implies, although again it's far from clear, that they are raped by the men of the town, and God destroys the cities for their wicked ways. Now, there are tons of progressive commentaries on why using this to hurt sexual and gender minorities is far too simplistic. And I invite you to hop online and see how this story has been used as a weapon and how the real sin is often ignored. The story is designed to condemn these cities, but not because of same-sex behavior. The sin of Sodom, sodomy, is pride. It's the lack of hospitality. It isn't really about sex. In other parts of the Christian and Jewish scriptures, such as Ezekiel 16, when the sin of Sodom is referenced, the sin is that Sodom is a vile and greedy city that ignored the poor, the needy, and mistreated visitors. So, the story of Sodom and Gomorrah is one of those a cautionary tale about not harboring the visitor or the stranger. And maybe you can remember that when someone throws that out to make an anti-gay or anti-trans comment. We best harbor someone who we don't understand by respectfully inviting them into our reality and asking, not demanding, that we be invited into theirs. In harboring, we enter into a bold and courageous relationship where we are asking to understand what we don't yet understand, and we're offering aid. We're offering to be an ally before we totally understand the other. Because you see, harboring is a leap of faith. We harbor because we recognize the common humanity in the stranger. And this common humanity is what all humans on this earth deserve. It is courageous and it is difficult. But at times, it can feel like a tightrope. When we have to acknowledge that we must find this common humanity without erasing the particular reality that the stranger brings. For example, when we talk about how far gays and lesbians have come in terms of social acceptance and legal rights, that isn't necessarily the experience of trans and bisexual folks. The experience of sexual minorities in the Western world is extremely different from the experience of LGBTQ people in places such as Jamaica, Nigeria, Uganda, and many of the countries of the former Soviet Union, where beatings, imprisonment, and various other forms of abuse are legal, and they have very heavy social support. We are now facing a similar tension in our country around the Black Lives Matter movement. This movement started as a way to raise consciousness around the treatment of African Americans in this country by the government and law enforcement. It is to be a wake-up call to remind us that we still face deep and painful racial inequalities. However, no sooner was the Black Lives Matter coined that people on the right, in some ways mocking and minimizing it, said that we must be talking about all lives matter. It's hard to dispute that logic, because in many ways, that's the kind of thinking we want to foster. We want there to be all lives matter. But the only problem is, the only way we understand that all lives matter is through the understanding of the particular stories of particular human beings. If we jump toward generalizing, if we assume what we know applies to everybody, we erase our fellow human beings, we lose the opportunity for dialogue, and we eliminate the chance to expand and enrich our understanding of ourselves and the human condition. We do the same thing when we insist that a bisexual person tell us whether they're really gay or straight, or whether we demand that an agender person tell us whether they're really a man or a woman. To harbor is not to simply provide help or shelter, but it is to risk safety, security, physically, emotionally, and psychologically out of compassion. To harbor means we dare to engage someone and allow ourselves to be changed by the experience of engaging them, even though we're unsure what changes will happen. I'm reminded of the very last line, and it was also the very first line of the song, "Would you harbor me? Would I harbor you?" This isn't just a gesture of pure altruism, but when it works, the line of harborer and harboree are bonded together in a bond that gives them both the potential to be new human beings. Now, as I end, I want to share a modern fairy tale, and I mean fairy tale, that will illustrate this point. Now, you can't have a gay male American preacher over 40 talking about these issues without mentioning Judy Garland or The Wizard of Oz. It's just not allowed. And as you know, the life of Judy Garland, for many reasons, is very important to gay men. Some of you may know that her death happened around the time of the Stonewall Riots, which was a major riot in gay history and a major beginning, really, of the gay rights movement. So for many reasons, she's had a particular place in our lives for gay men of a certain age. So there are many reasons for this, but I think today what I want to explore is how The Wizard of Oz is a story of a young person leaving her home and being thrust into a new magic land that mirrored the movement of many queer people as they left their homes and families and moved to big cities to find safety, community, and excitement. In the order of service today, you'll see an image of Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz with the words "Surrender, Dorothy" written around her. In the movie, the Wicked Witch of the West writes those words in the sky to threaten Dorothy, to let her know that all is lost and she should give up. But I also think this idea of surrender can be linked to harboring. I like to think that Dorothy, having been pulled into Oz, was changed by those magic creatures she encountered, the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and the Cowardly Lion. I like to think that she was changed by the fact that they take her in, they help her, they harbor her through this unfamiliar and often scary land. When Dorothy returns home at the end of the movie, she understands herself and her loved one in different ways. When back in Kansas, she looks at the faces, the familiar faces around her that she loves, and she sees a resemblance to the magical creatures she encountered in Oz. She sees a common humanity. And now she loves and understands both the people in her family and people far different from her family in new and deeper ways, and learns more about herself by being harbored and harboring them. As we try to live and grow and understand each other in this ever-changing, ever-expanding world of sexual and gender identities, I encourage all of us to harbor and be harbored by one another. Thank you.